Welcome to the Patient Partner Innovation Community Podcast, a podcast created to inform patients, families, and caregivers about important health transformation topics. Since the 2001 Crossing the Quality Chasm Report by the Institute of Medicine, our nation's healthcare system has recognized its need to improve quality of care by way of six important aims that make healthcare safe, efficient, effective, patient-centered, timely, and equitable. But we cannot hope to cross this chasm and achieve these aims until we make fundamental changes to the whole healthcare system. All levels of this work require dramatic improvements from the patient's experience. So this podcast is dedicated to you, the voices most underutilized resource in healthcare, our patients' voices. Welcome, and we hope you enjoy the Patient Partner Innovation Community Podcast.
Hi, I'm Dr. Natasha Washington, president and founder of ATW Health Solutions and sponsor for the Patient Partner Innovation Community. Follow the PPIC community online at atwhealth.com.
Well, hello, everyone. Thank you for tuning in to this week's episode of Patient Partner Innovation Community Podcast, PPIC lovingly for short. I'm your host, Desiree Collins Bradley, and I am very excited to talk about all things diagnostic safety. And we have a wonderful guest. Many of you know her. She is a powerhouse of an advocate nationally and locally. Her name is Janice Tufte, and she will be introducing herself in just a moment. Welcome, Janice.
Welcome, Desiree. How are you today?
I am doing just groovy. Yes, I'm always groovy. So before I get started, I want to kind of just touch on a little bit about our sponsor for this episode.
Great.
Our sponsor is ATW Health Solutions. ATW Health Solutions is a Chicago-based healthcare advisory and consulting firm that has gained national recognition for transforming healthcare delivery systems from ordinary to best in class. ATW Health Solutions use a data-driven, evidence-based approach to make healthcare better by focusing on improving quality and safety for organizations and government agencies. Simply put, we create and implement innovative solutions for the right problems and the right people. Thank you, ATW Health Solutions. So Janice, welcome. I know you very, very, very well, but our audience and our listeners may not know you as well. So I would love for you to take a moment to just introduce yourself to our listeners, Janice.
Thank you. I am Janice Tufte and I live in Seattle, Washington. And I have been involved with health services research, quality improvement, and evidence-based efforts for quite a while, actually. Probably, 15, 17 years. I started out advisory, my health center, it's now Kaiser, it was Group Health, and was asked to be on a research team, and where we developed a wonderful implementation that served the patients with their social needs. So basically I am involved across what I call the evidence-based ecosystem, which is kind of unusual for a patient, but that's what I enjoy doing. In other words, how when we give our information into either a research project or with our clinicians, how does that go through the whole cycle for best guidance and shared decision making for us, as well as our diagnostic efforts, that we're treating correctly and that our treatments are really defined and patient-centered.
Yes, and effective. Love it. And, as you're listening, so our podcast today is going to really be focused on elevating the awareness of diagnostic safety. I know I've had my own diagnostic safety error, misdiagnosis, delay journey. I won't get into all those details, but this touches really, really close to home for a lot of us in the community. You may know someone that has had a delay in diagnosis. I'm pretty sure someone either in your family, in your community, your colleagues, someone in your arm's length reach has been affected by a diagnostic safety event. So we're happy to have you share this information with us today, Janice. So can you share a little bit about your own diagnostic journey and what led you to really become involved in the diagnostic safety work at ATW and then also nationally as well?
Well, I actually was kind of born into it, actually. My parents, when they were pregnant with me, my father had developed a palsy, a seizure of sorts, and had to leave the military. And they moved from Virginia back to Washington State. And then I was born anyway. And a couple of years later, my father became much more ill, serious seizures, where my mother was a nurse, had to take him to the Veterans Hospital and said, "You have to take care of him now." And they told her to come back the next day. Anyway, it turned out he had a massive brain tumor that was not diagnosed when he first had the symptoms. So sometimes we have like early warning symptoms and we don't really address them, or we're not told the correct thing. And so we maybe keep going back before we get the right diagnosis. And I've been misdiagnosed and have actually utilized, you know, what Dr. Google and now maybe AI some, just by looking up symptoms to see what they have to say that I can then take back to my clinician and really mention that. So the importance of diagnostic safety is patients being aware that we're aware when something's not right, that we're able to convey that to our clinicians effectively so that we get the care that we need, and don't be afraid to really question when you know something's not right.
Yeah, and I can't reiterate that enough. Ask questions and even trust your gut, right? So if something doesn't feel right, it's okay to probe and dig deeper. I'll say before I got involved in healthcare quality improvement way back when, I had no idea that I could go seek second opinions. I thought that whatever my physicians, clinicians, providers told me is what it was, Bible, and that was it. Had no idea that I had the right to go seek a second opinion and question the information that was given to me. It took some time for me to learn that. And even now, everybody that I touch, I always say, you know, trust your gut. Your gut will not lead you astray. So, you know, for those who may not be familiar, so we're going to be talking about C4DS. So I'll let you kind of explain that. So many people are not, they may be familiar with ARC, but they may not be familiar with C4DS. So what is the CFER-DS, and why is it important for advancing diagnostic safety? So give us a little bit of background about C4DS and then tell us why it's important to advance the work.
Yeah, so basically I want to also say ARC is the Agency for Healthcare Research and Quality. It is the only funded federal organization around safety, and a lot of people are not aware of that either. And I was asked to be involved with the C4DS project, which is a common format event reporting for diagnostic safety. It's a mouthful. Basically, it's a format for us, really clinicians currently, to be able to report diagnostic events, which include either incidents, near misses, or serious events, right? So, but really incidents and near misses is something that often doesn't get reported. So where there's a safety compliance issue, maybe that it could be with a device, it could be, you know, with an IV, it could be almost anything, right? A human error. But as a patient, and I'm sure you've had this experience perhaps, or you know someone that has, when something's gone wrong, you don't know where to turn. So currently, this, I'm going to refer to it as C4DS. I expect that it's in the process of being available online in a PDF form available. I hope so, because that was what all of us who reviewed this format came up with, is that, you know, this needs to be fillable online. Having the ability as a patient or care partner to be able to fill this out online within a fillable format could be easily read by health systems, electronic health records, EHRs, and they could be picked up by coding that is behind the scenes. The ICD coding is connected to this. That's the International Clinical Disease Repository, ICD stands for. And regarding an online C4DS version, it should be available to patients, clinical staff, pharmacists, nurses, including long-term care facilities, So they could also be able to freely report. Currently, it's only for clinicians. So I believe this administration is really looking into including community. And so we're all hoping that we'll see something like this happen, because I know somebody recently that had a reporting event and they didn't want to turn it in. And I didn't even know really where they could report to, right, other than the state and the hospital. So having something online that could go directly within the system to prevent further safety reports would be great. Also, I think implementing an effective closed loop protocol, in other words, that where they know when something was done or some change, so that the misdiagnosis would not happen again, right? So that's what I was saying, it could get in the system, people could be aware, watch out for this, a little drop down menu. And safety teams at health facilities should include patients and carers to ensure the point of care voices are integrated into the best practices and policies going forward. So basically what the common formats are used that are what they are is they're evidence-based, they're harmonized across government agencies, so different agencies can know, understand what safety events are, and they also incorporate feedback from the private sector. But currently, we see that feedback so much, but ATW Health did pick this up and, you know, incorporated multiple stakeholder input on this C4DS. So we're hoping that something more usable and, you know, patient-friendly will come out of it.
Yeah, and I think that's really important. You know, we hear AI, right? So it should be easy, right, to have something that even my elderly aunt could report, right? Because a lot of times, you know, technology, people, well, I'll say this, it can be a little controversial, right? Some people love AI, others don't, they don't trust it. But I think in this particular case, we could really leverage the power of AI to really get people to report these events. Because you touched on something really key. Two things. So the ability to do it in an easy way to kind of relieve the burden. I mean, I'll be honest with you. When people send me things and I have to download it, it is such a time burden that sometimes I don't do it. Which is, do as I say, not as I do. But again, to your point, we should be able to get online, fill out a form. We fill out SurveyMonkey for free giveaways all the time. We should be able to do this here in a streamlined way, right?
Right.
And then the other piece to it is creating that access, the culture of reporting. Because, you know, a lot of times people don't want to report because fear of punitive actions, or they feel like, oh, if I say something, maybe the doctors are going to treat me as well. But if we kind of start building on the culture of transparency, I think this is one of the key components, is building on the trust of transparency. Because if something happens to me or my family member, we should be able to report that, because I want to hopefully prevent this from happening to other people. I think most of us in this space, hopefully have that ideology.
Yeah, I agree. That summed it up very well. I appreciate your summary.
Yeah. So thinking about your role that you played in this particular project as a patient support SME, and I'm going to say that again, a patient subject matter expert,
right?
Because I consider you a subject matter expert, and I do feel like the titles matter in this space, because a lot of times we're asked to share our stories all the time and they're like, oh, that gives us the warm and fuzzies. But a lot of us in this space are subject matter experts because this has happened to us. We've rolled up our sleeves, we've done the work. So I do consider you a SME, a SME. So, you know, what has your role on this project really felt like? What do you feel like your impact has been? How's the role been on this project for C4DS?
So I was honored to have been asked to be on this, but I, to be honest, when we looked at it and we had our first meeting, we were all like, wow, this is pretty intense. And I don't know if we're going to be able to like do this. And there was, I think, one other patient partner, myself, as SMEs, as we call subject matter expert. And neither one of us were familiar with it, right? And so we had a couple other meetings with the staff and talked about it. And we worked with a clinician. Each one of us worked with a clinician to be able to ensure that what we were developing would be effective. And the clinician I worked with was not aware of this either. We had a few laughs about it. And we came up with a lot of the same ideas regarding what you mentioned, like the culture of reporting. And if you do report, where does it go? She had a great story herself regarding how she bounced back between a hospital and a long-term care facility trying to report something, and how they weren't reading the reports. So the problem they're not reading the reports is because they're too long. So if this could be a fillable PDF, right, that you could just do and they could download instead of 5-6 pages, whatever it was, with drop-down menus, it helps a lot. But as a patient partner, I came in with, each of us had to think about our own, a specific type of incident, you know, a serious or an event that we had, like a missed opportunity, an incident, whatever. And so that really helped to inform me. What really helped was I wasn't quite sure where this common format was going. And I went in and looked at the different CFER DS forms, and I found one on pharmacist. And when I went to the pharmacist, I understood the whole concept. What this does is it allows for interoperability. And probably a lot of you are familiar with this and some of you may not be, but that means you go to your primary care doctor and then you go to a specialist, you go to a pharmacy, they don't all talk to one another. With interoperability, they can transfer that information. And that was why they kind of were just with clinicians, because they're the ones that, you know, do the coding or put in the information that's coded by somebody. So as a patient, I feel we were really able to bring relevant information, not only from our own diagnostic safety errors and bringing into that our community that we work with, all of us patient partners, that we have heard so many diagnostic safety errors where they could have been stopped before they happened, right? You know, they could lead more serious, acquired events. That coming from that background as patient subject matter experts, we're able to bring more voice than just ours to the table, because we're thinking, even though we're kind of looking at one area, and when we go through the form, we still are thinking about other people that have had something happen to them, like imaging results.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And then I think, you know, you touched on, I was going to ask you about, you know, getting patients involved, right? So like you said, when you joined the project, it was pretty, I'm going to use the word intimidating, as I've been involved in technical expert panels and other quality improvement projects. And after the first meeting, it quite frankly, I thought I was like listening to Greek. I was lost, overwhelmed, and I had to take a step back and say, okay, what can I do to kind of acclimate myself to the project? But thinking of the listeners that are patients, that are in the community, tuning into this podcast, two things. So how do you feel about, do we need more patients to get involved in this space? And also for the patients that are a little, I would say, shy to get involved, what advice would you give them? So it's both sides of the same coin, the impact as well as empowerment.
Yeah. Well, I think you brought up a good point, like shy people. I have found sometimes that some of the more shy people are more adamant about getting to the bottom of things, right? Like, because they're like, why did that happen? Why did that happen? Why did that happen? And they'll keep on asking and they'll keep going somewhere. So then on the other hand, you know, once you are, I call activated patient, not necessarily empowered, but activated, you know, when what makes you become activated or what empowered you to be involved. And once you understand that your voice does make a difference, but like around in this whole project, I think we all realize that we all want a better health system. And if we don't want to see safety events happen, and we have to listen to our body. And when we see it happen to our children, our parents, or ourselves, where do we go? I mean, if there's one takeaway from this, I think everybody should look into their own state and city or whatever. Where would you go if you had a near incident, a near miss, or an incident? And what would you do about it? I would never have thought of going online and looking for a format, you know? And I think to be honest with this administration, if they follow through with what they're talking about, that we actually, with our new HHS and CMS, that we actually might have the ability to be able to have a more understandable system. It will be assisted by AI to make it more simple, where we could just go in, where we should be able to type in and say, you know, a safety event, reporting a safety event, and it should be able to, you know, drop down. We're talking about diagnoses here, so that would be a little bit more, you know, I received the wrong diagnoses, but the same fillable format should be able to pick up. And then that is how the whole system and AI and our whole health system is how clinicians learn by these events, you know, how they can do better next time and prevent them. And sharing with your friends and others is another way to get them involved and to encourage them to be involved. But I think, like, how I went in and researched about, you know, I couldn't really understand where this was going, right? Like, where does this information go? And then I finally understood it is, I don't know if it's a total closed loop, but it should be. It should go back to the clinician. It actually was, but it didn't go back to the patient, right? So that's what we would like. And to, could go back to the pharmacist or the imaging, the radiologist. You need that, or the ophthalmologist, whoever. And so that's what I'm hoping for. But I think feel, you know, step out of your safe space and don't stop, because I do know people that stop work when they feel intimidated. And I've definitely been on projects where I talk a lot, but I actually tend to sit back and try to figure out, like what you said, in a TEP. And then I feel like I don't really have a worthwhile voice, maybe. I can't really contribute, but there's always somewhere I can contribute. And I think that's the best thing to remember. We don't, we can't contribute to everything, and we'll never know everything, but we can.
Well, you know, that's really important. And I'm you know, thankful that you were involved in the C4DS project, because I think you brought such a great perspective to the work, elevating your personal experiences and then those experiences of others to kind of make this click simple, right? That's the goal. That's the goal. So is
report,
there
report. Right?
Yes, report. Oh, wait, that's a tag phrase, Janice. Report, report. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. We're going to put that on the sticky. We're going to put that on the sticky. And not, again, I go back to culture shifts, right? So when you think about when we report things, it has a negative feel to it, right? But if we become more comfortable in this space to report those events in the hopes that this will help others not hopefully go through what we went through, there's that culture shift that happens, right? We've heard a lot about diagnostic safety error and transparency. We hear that. We read it. We see it on TV. We see it in printed articles. We've heard this in different ARC spaces, other projects, but we have to be able to shift the culture around this. And I do feel like the C4DS project, comment formats, is one way to shift that culture, not just for the clinicians and provider side, but bringing in those patients and having them have the ability to put what happened to them in this format so that others can kind of come together in that interoperability kind of culture to make sure that this doesn't happen. And then closing the loop, that's the other piece. I can't tell you how many times, and I'll use a quick little personal experience. I'm going into a physician's office and they may ask me a questionnaire around social determinants or health, or, you know, the PHQ-9, whatever that looks like. And then you take my information and you do nothing with it. That is very frustrating. So as patients are getting familiar with the common formats, right? Being able to report, what is that? What is the next level? I would say step two is making sure there is a feedback loop for the patients so that they're able to know that, hey, I submitted this, what's going to happen next? More to come.
I just want to add a couple of things. One is, you know, HIPAA, which is what clinicians take when they are going to care for people. It's, you know, the crux of healthcare, and it's first do no harm. But there's another caveat or well-known actually statement or phrase in medicine, and it's to err is human, to eat our art. And we all err. Our clinicians make mistakes and we make mistakes. As much as we need to change our climate, and as far as patients reporting and the importance of that, we also need to have clinicians that feel safe from, you know, what's, you know, from the janitor that notices something wrong up to the LPN, CP, you know, whatever, to the surgeon to feel safe, or somebody helping the surgeon to feel safe reporting something. Because today, like you said, people are fearful. They don't want to report it. So it can be anonymous, but report it, right? Because I saw this and we're hoping that this doesn't happen afterwards. It could be from, you know, not switching their gloves out, or, you know, leaving a sponge in somebody. I mean, it really does happen. Those are severe. That's an incident. But near miss is like accidentally giving, almost giving somebody the wrong medication. Right? Recognizing it. A nurse feeling safe to telling the doctor that. And patients do. I know you personally, Desiree, have confronted your clinicians regarding care for your daughter, right?
Yes.
And that will near misses help the incident not happen. But did that get documented? Did they know about it? And how did the people feel when you corrected them, right? And I think it's, you know, I'm not blaming you, but this is important. And you brought up a good point, is that for us, when we say this, it's about changing the system so it's safer. It's not about us, you know, trying to harm you or demean you.
Yes.
And that's what's important about it.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, and we all know it could be intense, right? It can be intense. I've had intense encounters, but I've always learned something from that. So, you know, I appreciate you elevating that point. I do truly believe that when anyone gets involved in healthcare, whether that's a clinician, a nurse, providers, therapists, patients, getting involved in this QI work, we really are trying to, most people, not all, most, get into this space to make healthcare better for everyone. And so, building on what you said in terms of making it a culture of non-punitive reporting, it's tough. It's tough. But we are all partners in this work together. So if I trust that I'm going to share this and something's going to be improved on it, my clinician trusts that he or she or them share what happened, that we're going to use it for process improvement and not for lawsuits and all the things. Right. No shade to people, you know, just if we just kind of shift that mindset of reporting, I think C4DS is one of those building blocks to do that. But, you know, we all have to work together. Whether we agree to disagree, we still need to be able to come together at the table, roll up our sleeves, and work together to make this better. Because when I'm long gone and my grandkids and great-grandkids are coming into the world, I want healthcare to be as best that it can be for them, and not just my family, but everyone's family. And I think majority of us feel the same way too, but I won't get on my soapbox too long.
Why not?
Yeah. So Janice, is there anything else before? I know we could talk for hours and hours. I love talking with like-minded individuals in this space, but is there anything else that you want to share before we bring our podcast to a close?
Sure. I just want to emphasize that what the C4DS is about is incidents, near misses, and unsafe conditions. So it covers all that. But for something like a serious reported event, you know, that's going to more likely be immediately reported, if reported. And I just want to say NQF, National Quality Forum, is with the Joint Commission, does have a list of serious reported events. And some people might wonder what a serious reported event is, right? So there's some included in there you maybe don't think of as that. So you can find that there. And I know ATW has worked with them as well. So Yeah, and I just want to say, don't be afraid if you feel like you said getting in your gut that something's not right, and or if you have a persistent issue, symptom, condition, and it's not getting better. You know, actually, what they tell us to go to the hospital. No, call your clinician or look up yourself. Ask prompted on AI or Dr. Google. I still go to Google as much as I go to whatever, you know, a search engine. I'm not promoting just one. And put in the symptoms and what is this, you know? I mean, just actually this week I'm doing something, meeting with my doctor today, because I realized something that I thought was my issue really might be something else. And so I'm going to bring that forward to them in a virtual meeting today. So we are, as patients, responsible for sharing the information that the clinicians need to know to be able to diagnose us properly. We are experts in our care and our bodies, and they're experts in the clinical aspect of it and the evidence. And so we just have to remember that we have to be able to present what we're concerned about effectively. It might help to write it down beforehand so you can do that, but because you might think of more things. And so that's really where it needs to go, is that you need to share little details maybe that you don't think about with your clinician to ensure a better diagnosis.
Absolutely. Well, Janice, this has been wonderful. I hope that those that are listening, look up C4DS. Look it up. Google it. Well, I'll say search engine it. And again, if you have any questions, please reach out to us at ATW Health Solutions. We are always here to support the healthcare community, patient community, to make sure that, you know, we're pushing healthcare in the best direction it could be. So Janice, I appreciate you. And I know we'll be talking really soon. But as always, PPIC community, be engaged. Bye.
Follow the PPIC community online at atwhealth.com.